Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for January 25th, 2011. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and today I'll be speaking with two authors of research articles in the current issue of Science Signaling that focus on mechanical regulation of cell biology. One of the papers explores the link between adipocyte stretching and obesity, and the other reports on a mechanism that helps neurons recover from swelling. First, I'll talk to Shu Wakino, author of the paper on cell stretching and obesity. Energy in excess of what's needed to maintain the body is stored in adipocytes, or fat cells, in the form of lipids. As they store more and more lipids, adipocytes increase in size, and this stretching causes changes in the cell's skeleton and activation of signaling pathways. In a paper published in this week's Science Signaling, Hara and colleagues report that Rho kinase signaling in adipocytes may link cell stretching with inflammatory changes in adipose tissue, and so may be part of a cycle in which increased fat storage leads to inflammation, which in turn aggravates and contributes to obesity. It's been known that Rho kinase signaling can be regulated by mechanical forces in cells of the cardiovascular system, and now your group is looking at mechanical activation of Rho kinase signaling in adipocytes, or fat cells. How does Rho kinase signaling differ between normal mice and obese mice?
Yes, that's a very important issue. The main message of this study is that not only metabolic changes, but also this mechanical stretch induce the phenotypic changes in adipocytes. Adipocytes in the adipose tissues in the obese mice are subject to this mechanical stress, most prominently in the body. So in the process of lipid storage, adipocytes of obese mice become by far larger than those in normal mice, which indicated that adipocytes of obese mice are under higher levels of stretch stress than those of normal mice. That difference of mechanical stretch is the key trigger of the activation of Rho kinase signaling in adipocytes. That difference is the important key trigger.
And what effect does that increased Rho signaling have on the mice? Is it a symptom of the obesity, or does it contribute to the physiological changes that accompany obesity?
Well, we believe that the overactivation of Rho kinase signaling contribute to the physiological changes that accompany obesity, which include weight gain or systemic insulin resistance. These findings indicate that Rho kinase signaling play a pivotal role in the obesity and obesity-related diseases. So the important thing is that overactivation is the culprit for the complication of obesity. So I dare to say that if the overactivation is well controlled, the obesity-related complication would be well managed in the clinical field, even if the patient is obese.
What sorts of physiological changes does the increased Rho signaling induce in the obese mice?
It shows in the paper the insulin resistance and also inflammation status in the obese mice, which maybe arise from the overactivation Rho kinase signaling in the adipose tissues.
So Rho kinase appears to be part of a cycle in which increased lipid storage induces metabolic changes that cause obesity-induced complications like insulin resistance and inflammation, which can actually stimulate further lipid storage. Can you prevent some of these outcomes by blocking Rho kinase signaling in the obese mice?
Yes, we believe that the intervention of this pathway can be a promising strategy against obesity and its related diseases. Actually, one of the Rho kinase inhibitors, Fasazil, has already been used for the prevention of vasospasm after subarachnoid hemorrhage, not a metabolic syndrome or obesity. But the safety of this drug is established. And the Rho kinase inhibitors have been used to treat diseases associated with inflammation, including asthma and rheumatoid arthritis. But however, since its role in the normal cells is also important, the long-term safety and its specificity to a Rho kinase isoform, ROCK1 and ROCK2, would be important issues to be overcome for the clinical use.
Thank you, Dr. Wakino, for talking with me.
Thank you very much. I'm very glad to talk with you.
That was Shu Wakino, author of a research article published this week in Science Signaling. That paper is by Hara and colleagues, and it's titled, Rho and Rho kinase activity in adipocytes contributes to a vicious cycle in obesity and may involve mechanical stretch. A second paper in this week's issue also focuses on mechanical stress and cell biology. Sato and colleagues report that vasopressin, which is an antidiuretic hormone, also acts as an autocrine signal to help neurons in the hypothalamus cope with swelling due to osmotic stress. When blood plasma osmolarity increases, that is, when dissolved salts become more concentrated, neurons in the hypothalamus secrete vasopressin, which causes the kidneys to remove less water from the blood so that a normal salt balance can be restored. Sato and colleagues now report that although vasopressin is released into the blood from the termini of hypothalamic neurons in response to increasing osmolarity, it's also released by the cell bodies and the dendrites of these neurons in response to decreasing osmolarity. Yasunobu Okada, the senior author of the study, spoke to me about the work, and he explained what happens to a cell when it's exposed to hypoosmotic conditions. That is, when a cell is surrounded by a solution that contains a very low concentration of dissolved salts.
Under the hypoosmotic condition, in general, the cell swelling is induced by water influx because the extracellular water concentration is higher than intracellular one, and because the cell membrane is highly permeable to water.
When the cell swells, how does that affect its physiology? I would assume that's bad for the cell?
The cell swelling, if persisted, results in necrotic cell death due to cell membrane rupture. The opposite case is apoptosis, where persistent cell shrinkage takes place. Thus, cell mass regulates their cell volume, coping with cell swelling kind of emergency. Animal cells regulate the volume shortly after osmotic swelling by the mechanism called regulatory volume decrease, RVD. RVD is simply attained by water efflux driven by KCl efflux. The swollen cells activate potassium channel and chloride channel on the cell membrane. However, in the previous study, no RVD was observed in these osmosensor neurons up to 10 minutes. Here, we show that vasopressin neurons do exhibit RVD, though slowly, taking over 10 minutes, thereby preventing from undergoing necrotic cell death.
How does vasopressin help the cells recover from swelling?
Oh, vasopressin released locally from the cell body and the dendrite of swollen vasopressin neuron stimulates its receptor of their neuron in an autocrine fashion and thereby facilitates RVD process. Vasopressin receptors are classified into three types of G-protein coupled receptors, V1A and V1B and V2. The V2 type is known to be localized in the kidney, and there has been no firm evidence for the V2 receptor expression in the brain. In the present study, we show the clear evidence for the expression of the V2 receptor in vasopressin neurons. Our study showed that the activation of this type of V2 receptor leads to G-protein-mediated activation of adenylate cyclase, thereby producing a well-known second messenger cyclic AMP. Cyclic AMP augments the swelling-activated chloride channel called volume-sensitive outward rectifying V-SOR anion channel, thereby facilitating the RVD process.
We usually think about vasopressin being released by these neurons into the circulatory system, where it acts in the kidneys to help the body retain water. But in this case, the vasopressin is acting on the neurons themselves.
Yeah. So the hyperosmolarity increases the systemic release of vasopressin from nerve terminal of vasopressin neuron, into blood. Then the blood vasopressin activates V2 receptor in the kidney and leads to cyclic AMP-mediated insertion of water channel into the luminal cell membrane, thereby inducing anti-diuretic water reabsorption. On the other hand, hypoosmolarity decreases the systemic release of vasopressin from the nerve terminal, but we found that hypoosmolarity does increase local somatodendritic release of vasopressin in the hypothalamus. Thus, local vasopressin activates V2 receptor of vasopressin neuron and leads to cyclic AMP-mediated augmentation of anion channel activity, thereby enhancing the RVD. Thus, blood vasopressin increases water permeability of the kidney cell membrane, thereby inducing a passive water influx into the kidney exterior cell. Whereas local vasopressin increases chloride permeability of the neuronal membrane in the hypothalamus, thereby driving water efflux from the vasopressin neurons.
So in the two contexts, vasopressin has what appears to be opposite activities. In the kidney, it promotes retention of water, and then in the neurons, it promotes the secretion of water from the cells to reduce the swelling.
Right.
Thank you, Dr. Okada.
Quite welcome.
That was Yasunobu Okada, senior author of a research article published this week in Science Signaling. That paper's by Sato and colleagues, and it's titled V2 Receptor-Mediated Autocrine Role of Somatodendritic Release of AVP in Rat Vasopressin Neurons Under Hypoosmotic Conditions. And that concludes the Science Signaling Podcast. If you have any questions or suggestions, please write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. The show is a production of Science Signaling and AAAS, Advancing Science, Serving Society. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and on behalf of Science Signaling and its publisher, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, thanks for listening.